finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show. Stevie is not here today. He's had some car trouble, and Conor Heenahan is after jumping in his place. So listen, first sub in, Conor. You know,
it's all about the depth of squad these days.
It's all about the squad game. Conan's here as well, and I'm glad you are here, Conor, because I've been tormented on Twitter for the week by Mayo fans, and they're like, why are you just brushing this Evan Regan? He was assaulted. This is absolute outrageous. One fella said, if Conor Boyle did that to David Clifford, there'd be war. And I haven't really got that from Mayo fans before. Usually Dublin fans tell me, you don't have a clue what you're talking about. You're biased. You don't have a clue. But I was getting this from Mayo fans during the week because I didn't think there was much in it. Now, there's a lot of Mayo fans think there was an awful lot more in it. So, like, I mean, make the case for your Mayo, the people of Mayo.
Well, I was going to make the case for you, to be honest.
All right.
because I've seen a bit of uproar about it online, and I think a lot of it is based on a video that's been slowed down to within an inch of its life. So I was in Castlebar on Saturday night, and I saw it at the time, and I thought it was completely innocuous. And then you see Evan Regan get up, and he was stumbling. He was clearly not right. He was stumbling all over the place. I've seen the video since, and my thing with it is that Evan Regan was cutting back in at pace, kind of dipped his head a bit. Ronan Shannon was coming the other way. It was a loose arm. Maybe it was bordering on, I wouldn't call it reckless, because I think it was the momentum that made the challenge. He kind of loosely just swung his arm to try and just dig it away from him, and he caught him on the chin. I think the attitude is because it was very niggly on Saturday night, very niggly. There was a lot of Kerry, obviously, set their stall out to build it up physically to Mayo, a lot of off the ball stuff. So that's probably, it's probably a result of that too. But to be honest, I'd be in your camp, Willie. I didn't think it was that bad.
What about you, Colin?
Well, like, in fairness to Ronan Shanahan, like, I don't know him personally, but I've met him a couple of times, say, outside media events and stuff. And
not that type of guy.
Honestly, God, though, like, I know, like, people like Lee Keegan, Lord, and
he helped an old lady across the road in my company.
He genuinely is, like, a very nice fella. Like, and honestly, like, you know, asking him even about Kerry Club football, can you explain Kerry Club football to me, Ronan? And the man would spend 15 minutes doing it. Like,
ah,
you
well, know, then he's innocent.
He's absolutely innocent.
This is
name clear.
This is the worst case.
And, like, Brawley in court, he's a real Gale, so he is.
My take on this is that Shanahan went to do Regan, not do him and break his jaw, which were Regan was running in the, along the end line. I think Shanahan with the way the game was going and the tension and the hits in that game, Shanahan was coming in to meet him with a shoulder and drive him out over the line. I think that was in Shanahan's head. He was coming at him with pace. At the very last second, Regan checked off his right boot, cut right in towards Shanahan, and at the last second it's going on in Shanahan's head, well, I'm supposed to break him up, I may get some contact on him, and made some effort at making contact and caught him wrong. And I honestly think that that happened in such a split second that there's no way you could, and it wasn't Shanahan that went and met him with anything, it was Regan that turned into him.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, when it was in Shanahan's head, is this Regan's been stuck out over this line, I'm going to meet him with a shoulder, and then all of a sudden Regan's coming towards him so soon, it's impossible for Shannon to change his mindset from I want to get contact on him to I'm just going to let him go inside me. And
yeah,
I don't think it happened so fast. I don't think there's any intent to, like, I mean, to break his jaw. I think the Mayo fans, like, I'm not sure, there's a lot of them have been onto me on Twitter, but I don't think they're representative of everybody.
I'm just surprised they've never been on to you on Twitter before. The Mayo GAA kind of supporters on Twitter happen to be pretty militant.
Yeah,
so.
But I have a graw for Mayo. Mayo to win in All Ireland. Now, I do criticise them when they deserve it, but maybe it's just the whole idea that I want Mayo to win in All Ireland that maybe they don't torment me as much.
You've let them down, Willie.
Yeah, and I wanted Dublin to win in All Ireland in 2011, and look how quickly that changed. You know what I mean? So, right, talking about Dublin, Brian Howard. This is some information I got on Monday, that Brian Howard wasn't going to tog out for the college the following day. He's on a scholarship. He didn't tog out for the college the first day. So, like, I mean, I'd say it's safe to say Brian Howard is under a lot of pressure to keep his scholarship if you're getting a scholarship to play Sigerson and you're refusing to play Sigerson. Now, obviously, I'm not saying, like, this is a big decision for Brian Howard to make in his life. that I'm going to give up this money that you need. I don't know his kind of family situation, whether they've got a lot of money or whether this means nothing to him or this is a huge big deal to him to lose this money. But we know Brian Howard didn't go on the team holiday. We talked about that last week. And we talked a lot about the level you have to get to get on this Dublin team and stay on this Dublin team. So he's on it and he's doing all right. Can he take the risk like David Clifford? Go play against Kerry fatigued and do your hamstring. Then he's gone. Clifford will get back on the Kerry team. Would Howard get back on the Dublin team? What's his objectives for this year? Is it to make the Dublin team or is it to play Sigerson Cup? I would say you've got 90% one, 95, 99 one, 1% the other. So he's foregoing these wages. What I would love in this situation, I don't blame Brian Howard because I think he's put in a horrible situation and the championship structure is unfair on him. What I would love if Jim Gavin just said to Brian, Brian, I promise you, go play with your college, don't lose your scholarship. I promise you, you'll play the next game. I'm not going to punish you for playing this. I'll rest you the following week because you've even Fitzmaurice talking about player welfare and stuff this week. And this player, easy say player welfare, the week after Clifford does his hamstring after playing Wednesday, Sunday. That's not player welfare. That's player welfare after the fact. You know what I mean? These managers need to think of the player and not them.
So what do you want Jim Gavin? Do you want him to say Sunday?
I want Jim Gavin to say, Brian, don't lose your scholarship. Play away. It's not going to affect your position. And if you have to sit out this weekend, you will get another chance. I promise you, because you've put in a huge effort. You haven't gone to holiday. I don't know. There has to be a way around this.
It is different, though. Like we mentioned about Dublin. Like even if Jim Gavin says that, if I'm Brian Howard, you'd be like, well, I don't want this other player coming in and playing because he's so good, and he might just get to keep his place, and I might get a chance. But all of a sudden, this boy gets sort of pushed up the pecking order, and Brian Howard's almost an afterthought. Then it's a scary position to be in because not everyone is in that position. Like Dublin's completely different.
It is completely different. But if he's played well the first two games, right, and it's the league, and he misses one game, Jim Gavin will find a place for him, give him another shot for the last two games. Or if this is only the worst case scenario that something happens that he gets injured or whatever, I do think if a scholarship is on the line, we don't know if it's definitely on the line, but I'd say it's definitely on thin. It's on thin. It's on thin ice here, right?
I was looking at a very, very cold eye, though. I was thinking, this is mad. He's doing this for going maybe a Sigerson Cup. I saw some ex-players and yourself as well. Like they were talking about winning a Sigerson Cup is better than the National League and stuff like that. Which is obviously a great first-hand experience to say. But for Brian Howard, he's going to lose his place anyway, was what I was thinking.
Who was saying that? I won't say he'll make championship. Who was saying the Sigerson's
so
better?
So Eamon Burns, who won the championship with Derry, or All Ireland with Derry in 93, he would have played with Queens and stuff. I saw somebody suggesting that no county player should play in the Sigerson Cup, but he would have done that, played for Derry and Queens, and he was thinking Sigerson Cup is better. Than this,
I wouldn't have the Sigerson over the National League. I'd have it next.
You could have both of them, I suppose, anyway, is the argument. But I think Howard will lose his place anyway. So I was thinking, wow, this is mad. He is getting rid of it. But the fact that it is that competitive, it's why he's got the jersey now. There's no other way.
Surely he is going to lose the scholarship, because surely the whole point of being on a GAA scholarship in the likes of DIT is to play Sigerson.
That's
the prime competition for college footballers.
They're at the weekend now, so maybe he might find time for the weekend and all is forgiven, play as well.
Think they're doing a weekend this year.
Is there not?
No, I think they're putting an end to the two games in 2 days when we're talking about player welfare. That's one of my club mates is on the DIT panel, and I asked him when the weekend was, and he said that they're not doing the weekend this year. But I kind of think that Jim Gavin might be secretly delighted at something like this, that so he can say in camp, lads, look, Brian Howard is foregoing the chance to play DID and in Sigerson, look what he's prepared to do, and foster this culture of just whatever it takes to win.
And AIG have given me this briefcase of money, Brian, and we'd like to present it to you for the foregoing of your scholarship. So Kieran Russell is an interesting one, and he came to our attention after talking about Brian Howard, and as it turns out, Kieran Russell has had basically indentured slavery is a phrase coined by Joe Brawley, and this is indentured slavery. There's no doubt about this. Okay, there is a doubt about it, but he's played six games in 12 days, but wait, there's more. It's not just the 6 games in 12 days. So he's played on Tuesday, January 23rd with the Garda College in the Sigerson. On Thursday, January 25th, Garda College in the Fitzgibbon. Then he played on the Saturday, Clare against Cavan in the National League. Then he played the next Tuesday, Garda College Sigerson. Then the next Thursday, Garda College Fitzgibbon. And then the Sunday, Clare versus Mead in the National Football League. But another thing about what's interesting about Kieran Russell is Kieran Russell is no longer in the Garda College. He's now a guard, and we know with the Garda College it's different than other colleges. You're only there for 8 months, but you also have another period of time when you're out of there where you're still eligible, where you're out in the force, you're a trainee guard, and you can still play Sigerson Fitzgibbon. So he's out working in the force, right, with this schedule. So he's on nights on the Friday night before the Cavan game. So he works all night Friday night until 4 a.m. on the Saturday morning. Goes home to bed, and the alarm's going at 10 the next morning to get a bus up to Cavan.
They're leaving at 10.
They're leaving at 10. Oh, this is after playing Fitzgibbon on the Thursday and Garda and Sigerson on the Tuesday. That's outrageous. That's, and how he played 5.5 of the 6 games. Like he was saying, Conan, what was it? He felt a little bit legs a bit heavy in the league.
His legs were stuck to the ground or something like that. And that's something I don't really appreciate. I know we always bang on about being amateurs and like how great we are for not getting paid for doing what we do, but you don't, when you're talking about boys playing 3 games in 7 days, you're not fostering in the fact that some of them are doing exams, but some of them are going to work every day. They're commuting. There's all this other stuff on top. Like how many times do you train and be like, geez, I'm going to be tight, you know, for the next training session. Am I going to be ready for that? Like, where these boys are playing 6 games in 12 days. It's madness.
Now, we can't hammer the GAA for the Sigerson and Fitzgibbon, because if he's a dual player and he's choosing to play two, he's going to have those 4 games on the Tuesday, Thursday. Like, that's unavoidable. Like, if he wants to go down that road of playing dual, and that's to be commended. What we can complain about the GAA about is that they're overlapping with 2 National League games, so that's really and these are like really important National League games. One at home to Cavan, pretty sure they drew that, and then we're hammered at home to Mead. Now we're talking about moving the Sigerson Fitzgibbon to January, get it out of the way, give this competition the respect that it deserves, and then start the National League. So there's no nonsense every year between club managers and college managers, and none of this situation arising. So you finish that and then you start your National League. Then again, there's the whole issue with exams in college. So, like, I mean, we were just asking in the office yesterday, and I think the Ulster colleges have exams in January. The colleges down south have, DCU have them in January, all the others have them in December before Christmas. So, like, that's another little mess that, you know, that you have to contend with. I don't know. I just think the Sigerson is just 2 qualifying games and bring it back to a weekend. It's only and the weekend at the end of January, maybe when the exams are over. So you'd really only have 2 qualifying games during January. Can lads with exams not work around that? I don't know.
Maybe, like, you know, this is just a case of you have to play for your county or your college at this time, and then if there's situations like Brian Howard who's getting a scholarship, it might stop colleges just paying as to come in to play GA. Like, maybe that's the issue that needs to come out of all this. Like, the colleges need to stop that, because that is getting a little bit out of hand there as well.
Where with some colleges, but that's, listen, you don't get very much back out of GAA financially, I don't think. Getting a scholarship because you're good at GAA is a lovely thing. I think that would be a little bit cruel to take that off.
But I think people were asking, like, you know, who's missing out on a scholarship now because Brian Howard was getting it. Now, listen, I don't know Brian Howard's circumstances and stuff, but if he was just approached to say, will you come here and play football for us, then somebody genuinely is missing out on it.
Yeah, maybe they are. I don't know how many of these colleges approach clubs. I'd say definitely back in Tralee when I was there, I was approached. Sligo IT put a big effort into it for a while, got a great team. I reckon there might have been a few approaches there.
Yeah. Good agent playing the field.
DCU out of I don't know.
I remember hearing that all 15 players on DCU a couple of years ago were all on scholarships.
So if you're not getting money off DCU, you're useless. You're under third team. You're under third freshers team, probably.
The QPR of college.
They're outrageous, the amount of money. But I don't know, because maybe, like, I mean, it seems to me such an easy fix in January. But if it's, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, then another thing, if you're in your final year and exams are that important to you, like, I mean, just don't play Sigerson that year.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way. Put it in January. Like, my college exams, first year, second year, I could have managed a Wednesday night Do you know what I mean? Unless it was the night before, unless it wasn't the night before, maybe the fixture could be arranged that it's not the night before someone's exams. Or I'm not sure. Yeah. There's so many different players. Maybe that's impossible to do as well.
Sometimes you're delighted to have that release as well. If you're really busy, to have a couple of nights training, to have the weekends. But I hadn't factored exams into it at all. But that whole exams after Christmas thing is torturous anyway. You know, to make it's students poxy, yeah. study over the Christmas. So,
but that's only that's DCU and the teams in Ulster, I think, have that issue. Yeah. So listen, just change the whole educational system first, and then we'll worry
about education structures.
Yes, educational structures to fix the championship structures. Let's get into that. Another quick one I was reading during the week, and this is this Don't Foul Twitter account, who does a lot of statistics and does some really good stuff at times, and he had some information about free takers against Dublin, which I found was interesting. And he said against Dublin, free takers are 68% into the Canal end, but unexpectedly 86% into the Hill. So all the jeering actually seems to concentrate the free taker rather than put them off. I thought it was an interesting one. And then, like, I initially put this talking point down because I thought Stevie was going to be here. And let's be honest, Stevie scored an awful lot more in Croke Park than the three of us put together. You can multiply it. So I wanted to get Stevie's opinion on this, and I will ask him next Thursday. Just remember from my own point of view, I remember thinking that it was a lot easier kick into the Canal end, and maybe just that kind of full stand behind it, it was just easier get your bearings where you look back up to the Hill. And I would have played in Croke Park a lot in the Leinster Championship, where Croke Park wouldn't be full, you know, in the Leinster quarter final, mm-hmm. Leinster semi-final. I've played in Croke Park way more times. Like, I've played in Croke Park probably more times than Peter Canavan, which is outrageous, but I would have played a lot of Leinster games. When the Hill is empty, then the Hill is all white and it's behind white goalposts. And it's very hard, I think, judge your distance of how far. I know you can judge off the lines on the field, but sometimes you think you're closer, and the ball's dropping in the 6-yard box, and it's like, Jesus Christ, I gave that a nice kick. But there are things that you have to get your bearings around in Croke Park, where maybe just playing there that extra little bit might improve it.
But would you have been put off by Dublin fans per se, like when you were playing Dublin, and because they were jeering or giving you abuse or something like that?
Yeah, I've only kicked I kicked one pint into a full Hill 16.
Just give it.
No, I didn't. I've said this before in this podcast that I ran business like back to my position, exactly like I complain about lads doing now, and I was delighted with myself. It was in Leinster final in 2008, and I got three that day from play with a broken toe. There's Mark and Paul Casey though, so it doesn't really count. But I remember kicking a score into the Hill. But we had talked before the game. Liam Kearns had asked us not to celebrate the free kicks or not to celebrate scores. He says, let's look like we mean business today. It was like a sports psychology thing. So he said, and I don't want you to line up along the 45 during the national anthem. I want you to get into your traditional positions and stare down your Dublin lads as they come down to you in their position. Again, just we're mean business today. So we got into the 15 positions, and I really missed that whole thing of standing in your position during the national anthem. I think that's the tradition that's gone. Yeah. We won't get it back, but I hate that line, band of brothers while they're Lincoln. It's nonsense. But so I scored 3 points that day and didn't celebrate any of them. Just business-like ran back. And I used to love an old fist to the crowd. But anyway, I can't remember what I was talking about here. I'm just going back through.
Kicking into the Hill.
Into the Hill, yeah. That was a full Hill 16. And a full Hill 16, again, was an awful lot different than an empty Hill 16. Yeah. I think the posts are white. And against the white concrete, it's not even easy to see the posts.
Your man Don Foyle was talking about the different stand in, or sorry, the two tiers at the Canal end, thinking that was probably a problem for free takers. I don't know.
Maybe.
Like, have you taken frees before?
No, I was never trusted with them.
But now, I know it's completely different circumstances, but Killian O'Connor's two in the last 2 years were into the Canal end, were they? Is that right?
Into the Hill.
Oh, right, there you go. We'll just ignore everything else.
As I mentioned, Killian, a few years ago, himself and Enda Vardy, before they played Dublin, I think it was in the semi final. They downloaded Hill 16 chants onto their phones or onto their iPods, and when they were practicing frees, then they just had the headphones on the training pitch. And actually, I think they both had a good record that day. So it's a pity Killian didn't do it for the last 2 years.
It was I've heard of lads doing that, just having whistling noise and stuff like that for free takers. But I would have thought going into the Canal end, you'd pick a point like the clock and aim it for that and bring it. There's
a sponsorship,
something like that. Let's send it towards there and bring her back in, where the Hill. you just have people jeering you, but maybe it does concentrate you if they're the stats.
Johnny Wilkinson used to say it was some girl that he didn't like and he pictured her right between the posts and he was just looking to drill the ball off her
really?
Face sort of, yeah.
Girl
Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah,
it's very un-Johnny Wilkinson.
It is very very more Joey Barton like I would have thought maybe. This is the most important story of the day, lads, and this is a motion Tipperary have brought to Congress. So they brought to their county convention, and this was roundly agreed upon, or else it wouldn't have gone towards Congress, and Congress have accepted it. So it's going to be up for a vote. So they're looking to define him a Lee, right? So good luck to them, right? And this is obviously coming from the Davy Fitzgerald Jason Ford incident last year in the league semi-final between Wexford and Tipperary. So David Ford that day was found guilty of contributing to a melee. And he only ran in and gave Davy Fitz an old shoulder, and Davy Fitz went back mounting at him. So Tipperary's argument is, how could it be a melee when there was only two people? So what is a melee? What is it? Well, I don't know, actually, what is a melee. So we're going to know.
When does a melee become a shemozzle?
Yeah, well, that's it.
So this was the thing. So he went to the Central's Appeal Committee, and he was asked about the aggro, and he said, how many people needs to be in it for a melee? And at the Central Appeals Committee, they said at least two. So two is in a melee. I don't think two could possibly in a melee. Has to be more. So I'm going to start up a quiz here, lads. And I like a quiz. I like to throw a quiz at you every now and then. So I want you to tell me what each one of these are. So what's handbags?
I reckon it's the just when there's pushing and shoving and a load of shaping.
Excellent.
And then at the end of it you're like, nothing to see here, move on.
Yeah, okay, pushing and shoving is handbags, right? And
good
I
answer.
Think most people understand that. So that's 1-0 to Connor. He got in there first. What's a shemozzle?
That's everybody in, isn't it?
No.
But not doing not anything. I would say that's a not. Hang on, not everybody. Let me redefine it. I'd say it's 10 up in, but there's nothing really going on. A lot of pushing and like, you know, one of those ones where you grab the boy by the scruff of the neck but you push your fist into his chest. I'd say that's a shemozzle.
I think a shemozzle is a difficult one. This is an even more difficult one. What's a fracas?
Sounds like a crowd thing to me. Like, you know, something's going on in the crowd.
Oh, that's not bad. Well,
do you know when one of those melees breaks out and then it stops?
Well, we don't know what a melee is first.
Well,
so
one of those kind of rows that around 10 people breaks out, then it stops.
Shemozzle.
And then another one starts about 15 yards away.
That's a shemozzle.
I'd say you might call that a shemozzle, or maybe even upgraded to a fracas, depending on the amount of cards.
Fracas? You didn't even like the S at the end of it.
Fracas.
No, maybe it is a fracas. Could be right. Right, free for all. That's obviously an easy one.
Yeah, that's the videos that you see.
That's Mayo Meath, 1996.
Yeah, and that well, that's the bench coming in. That's the whole lot. Yeah, that's basically World War Three. What's getting to know each other?
Ah, this that's one, right? You know when at the start of a game, when a cornerback sees his man coming towards him, right, and he levels him with a shoulder straight away, or when you see a sub coming on, and the cornerback nails straight into him, they spend the next 5 minutes just shouldering each other back and forth. That's definitely that.
That's Vinnie Murphy's made getting to know each other kind of famous coming in like that. So that's them all, really. So you've got row, which is they're all pretty much interlinked. The melee one, I don't know what really how they're going to define this. It's just basically, it's a fight. Now, talking of fights, any fighting stories, lads? Because I thought this might be a little bit interesting. I will start off because I didn't get in fights on the field, right? It just was not part of my game. I like to talk a lot. I like to get in verbal arguments. But I grew up playing with Portlaoise, and we always would have been the strongest team in Laois. Would have won under 14s, under 16s, minors, under 21s, like lots of them. And we were always told, don't get involved in that shit, because that's what other clubs used to try and do to us, drag us down to their level, hit us. We were always told, if you get hit, go down, which is perfectly fine. So anytime I'd get hit, I'd go down. It's just in my nature. I just wouldn't stand and fight. But I've been in one. There was one fight I got in, and it was with Laois, and it was towards the end, maybe a bit towards the end of my career. But it was a really confusing one because it was a challenge game on a Sunday morning out in the heat, right? And we were playing Offaly, and I can't remember what happened with my man, but we ended up going to fight anyways, right? So it was like, put up your jukes and fight. And I remember thinking that I put in the greatest performance ever. I was like Floyd Mayweather. So his lip was bleeding. I gave him two jabs into the mouth. punches into the mouth. He didn't lay a fist on me, right? So I was going into the dressing room after the match thinking, geez, yeah, I'll get a bit of respect here now after this. And they were all laughing at me. And, like, I mean, my memory of how that fight went was completely different to the other lads. So if you ever see Brendan Quigley and MJ Tierney, just ask them about that fight on the Monday morning, because they have a different story. They reckon I did a pirouette. I was on the back foot retreating away, but I'm a defensive boxer. I'm a counter puncher. Yeah. So why am I going to stand in the fight? But all the time in this row, I was looking around wondering who's going to come in and blindside me, because I seen Alan McNamee and he's a big lump of a fella and he's running down from midfield. So I'm trying to jab and weave and keep away from this fella and fighting, all the while making sure McNamee's not within striking distance of me. And then when McNamee got down involved, I'm like, I've enough now. I don't want any part of that. But it's funny, just like, I mean, I don't know what clubs you were with, because there are some clubs that would be encouraged to get stuck into them or give them a dig.
Ours would be something similar to you, but then there was a stage where we had, this is back home now, where we had like a young group, so after a while it was like, we have to stop taking this shit, you know, we have to stand up for ourselves. And so when I first broke into the senior team, I was cornerback and our captain was fullback, and him and his mum were sort of, this is the first league game before the match, him and his mum were having a bit of a coming together, or what would you say, getting to know each other. And so I thought, I'll go to the captain, will really like me here if I go over and sort of try and help him out and stuff. And actually he was sort of a bit embarrassed that I would come over, so he was sort of shooing me away as if to say, you know, piss off, I'm alright here. And then my man had a hold of me and he hit me an elbow up the face, and he's much bigger, like I had no weight on me, still don't, but and I sort of said to him, oh, good man, go on, do that again. Hit me an other elbow up the face. I didn't ask for it again, the ball got thrown in. two elbows up the lip and nose.
Do you think there's managers that encourage players to go out and burst him air, get burst him early? Like, do you think there's managers that sink that low?
I think there used to be.
Definitely.
Like, yeah. I'm still, possibly, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, yeah, I'd say so.
Definitely in Derry and Ulster anyway.
Okay, I'm just thinking of some managers in Derry and some club players in Derry.
I've been in dressing rooms where it would be like, whatever you do, you know, you have to go in hard but never go dirty. But if there's a young fella out there and they're buttoned up to him, well then don't let me see him being left on his own, you know, kind of go in there and make sure, kind of, as you said, kind of stand up to it. But of course nobody can just stand up to it without kind of throwing a few digs, and before long, you know, all hell breaks loose. I'd say when I was younger I would be more inclined to join into that sort of thing, whereas now I avoid it completely, because I find that the rows are often started by the team that are winning and are trying to distract you from actually, you know, if they have a comfortable lead and they just want to mess with the game, mess with the other momentum, you get dragged into it, a couple of cards and your momentum is completely gone. So I suppose age has brought maturity, but back in the day I would have been inclined to get involved.
But it's madness anyways getting involved in those things, because if you want to go running from distance to get into one of those rows, you can be sure someone's lined you up running into it. So you might run in and you might get your punch in there and you're great, but the minute that lands, you're being blindsided by someone that's been clocking you running in. So, like, I mean, it's just stupidity. Yeah. Anyway,
you have to go in though, because there's a whole bench there watching you not going in.
Oh yeah, no, I refuse to go in. See, if I go in, I'll be followed by four lads off the other team. So I was too smart to get involved in them, because with my mouth, it's like, I can't go in. I can't. I'd have to say it to the lads, you know, I can't go in there. There's just light on me and that's it. So I didn't see any point in it. But that's enough. Jeez, they're not really even hero stories here, lads, are they?
No.
Barrison stories.
Coward stories.
Right, we're coming back in a minute with Ryan McManaman.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you.
All right, delighted to say, from Anna, assistant manager Ryan McManaman is on the line now. Ricey, how's it going? Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Willie. Thanks, Smith. How's going? All right, thanks.
All good, all good. Come here, you're in the wars again.
Well, it was probably, I think more the war came to me anyways, but no, look, it was nothing worth talking about, you know. So look, it was one of them things, probably. It can happen sometime, but no, like, it probably, in the terms of the game, probably it was it was a nothing matter, so I actually forgot about it and moved on. So it was not, it actually did come to me for once, so I'm happy enough with that.
Well, that was the picture I have in my head, because I was reading a report and a melee involving 16 players from both sides happened right in front of your dugout. So I'm thinking you're just minding your own business, you're trying to keep your head down, and this all erupted around you.
Yeah, something like that. You hit the nail right on the head. Hey, Willie, I can't. You're a great judge. You're a great judge. Hey, and
I could be your defense solicitor. I should be. And,
yes, and that, probably. I think that's what it was, and probably my most concern was probably player health and safety. You know, so look, it was one of the things. It just erupted up my sideline and nothing. And for me, like, it happened in the last week or so. So it's just one of those things. It probably happens up and down the lines in every game. And just probably, unfortunately, my name kind of got involved in it. So it makes it worse. It makes it sound worse than it actually was.
Come here, how are you enjoying the experience with Fermanagh?
Oh, yeah, look, I think I said it before, it's a great experience, you know. And it's great actually working with the boys, you know. And they're actually a great bunch of lads, and they're always willing to learn, you know. And probably for myself, like, it's a great eye opener for myself working along with Rory and working along with Leon and Shane McCabe, you know. Like, you're definitely getting a lot of different ideas, you know, and probably on the way teams are set up and the way different teams, and probably see, just probably training teams at a high level, like at an elite level, if you're training at, like, so it is nicely.
That's a question I wanted to ask you. Is Rory obviously learned his trade with Jim McGuinness, and, you know, everybody would rate Jim McGuinness so highly. So when you're going in learning from Rory, would that level of preparation and tactical preparation have surprised you, or would it, you know, would it be stuff you've seen before?
Oh no, look, it's definitely probably if there is stuff that you've seen before, and there is stuff that, and it's just about how about you're going to set up, you know, like, and how about you're going to use it to yourself, or how you're going to adapt, you know, like. So look, it's a learning both ways, you know. Rory, I know the two of us throw ideas off each other, you know, and it's kind of, and it's usually something sticks in all the time. But no, look, like, I was, as soon as I come in, Rory, like, there was other stuff that we were working on, whatever, like there was stuff I'd never seen before that he was keen to get how to put in for money, you know. So, like, you're always learning all the time, you know, and like probably the amount of detail that he does put into it, you know, if he's crazy now when you're getting WhatsApps, maybe last night about watching videos we're going through the last year together, probably watched it last night, you know. So when you're getting that, maybe about 11:30 at night, you know, you can't go you kind of have to say, like, he does put a lot of effort into it, and so you kind of have to replicate it, and you do, like, it's the effort at this level that's really you do have to do, like.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, he's looking back over the tapes, and, like, he's trying to point out tactical stuff that you might not have had enough players back, or you might have had too many players back, and little things like that.
Yeah, look, it's probably just stuff like that. That we kind of probably, I think, I'd seen enough. All management teams are doing it, you know, and it's just probably. I think anyone that's asked me probably how you're getting on or going with that, it's just what's probably taking me back is probably it's the level of work that's involved in it, you know. So
yeah,
you're basically leaving your job and at 5 o'clock on a weekday, and you're heading back out again to start another job, you know. So
yeah.
So basically you're not back in the house to maybe sometime 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, you know. So but look, it's enjoyable work, and I'm probably lucky enough in a way that the Fermanagh boys are such good trainers and are such good C1s and then, you know, like, if you didn't have that, you know, you'd be questioning yourself why you're doing it, you know.
And I suppose that level of work you have to put into it might be due to the fact that Fermanagh's budget wouldn't be all that high. Like, I mean, I'm sure the likes of Dublin and Kerry would outsource a lot of that video work, whereas you might have to do it yourselves.
Yeah, look, but at the end of the day, I think the whole lot of us in the team, you know, like, and you don't mind doing that work, you know, because probably, I think myself and Roy, like we're hands on when it comes to that. There, I think you're probably like a certain amount of control on what's been done, you know, like, and so you always like to watch the tapes back again. And I think everyone does, and you probably learn more probably from victories, probably in a way for the game against Offaly, you know, like we won. So we you kind of learn more, and probably if you're outsourcing it all the time, probably you're leaving in the hands of other people, you know. So
yeah,
I don't mind doing it. I enjoy watching football. I enjoy it. Even though you are watching two or three times the same game, but I enjoy watching it and enjoy learning all the time, you know. So for me, I don't mind it.
Come here, how did that phone call with Rory go? He rang you back in September. Were you surprised with it, and what was said?
Oh, look, he thought, like, I was surprised now, because I didn't know who it was, you know, at the start. I kind of thought it was a wind up, and then I got, no, just look, we got chatting anyway, and he was asking, would I be interested to. But I'm interested to come in, you know. And probably I was surprised maybe that he didn't think or ask me, because it was probably something that was never on my radar, you know. So look, I probably told him, I said, look, if I was going to do it, I'd have to sit down and think about it a long time, because I was still kicking a bit of ball for the club as well, so like I'm enjoying that. So in the early age, you know, so I knew that was going to be a factor, and probably too I was still taking probably my wife's team, and they were still in Ulster, you know. So I just had to do a lot of that. But no, look, I was surprised. Look, we had a conversation, and look, I chatted over with Maura, the wife, and she says you may as well have a crack at it anyway. So sat down then, like, and then I met Rory then, and we sat down, we just chatted about football, you know, first, just to see if the two of us kind of could the two of us click. There's no point agreeing, and then if they find maybe the two of us maybe we're polar opposites, you know. So we sat down and looking we found there was consensus, you know, that we could work together, you know, and we took it from there. Really.
You must not never have marked Rory if he's ringing you to be his assistant manager.
I came across him a couple of times. I came across him in friendlies, maybe, but I think I came across him when he was Donegal. You know, you could always have words, you know, whatever, like, you know. But no, look, it is what it is, like, you know. And probably I think probably if you dwell too much on that day, you know, it's like to get on, you know. And probably Roy thought he wanted men, you know, and I was keen to learn. So like the two of us kind of we thought it'd be good to work together, so
yeah,
we kind of went forward.
Come here, what's your impressions of Fermanagh? Because like, I mean, my impression of them looking from the outside is that they're all good ball players. We know there's a few lads back this year as well to strengthen your hand. How good are they, or compared to what your idea of them was?
Yeah, look, probably before I joined them, you would have the fair idea probably that they did have a lot of good footballers, and probably they were better than probably what they thought, you know. But they could never seem to get the other boys missing or boys away. But and then you always thought maybe that they had good footballers, you know, like a played soccer with the two McCuskers a couple of times, you know, and then I did know they had good footballers, and it was just probably trying to get them good on a consistent basis, you know. And probably once you come in and work with them, you know, you do realise that they are, it is a mindset, you know. You do hear it out there that there is only three or four teams that can win in all Ireland, and maybe that's true or not, you know. But like, you talk about the next 27, 28 counties that are out, you know, all the boys are committed, you know, and they're all really good footballers. Maybe sometimes maybe in the media forgets maybe that there are other footballers outside maybe the top four that are really good. And it's just, look, we came in with just trying to make these boys better footballers, you know, and trying the best their ability to make them better. And I think they are better footballers than that the division that they're in. But look, they're in that division, they have to get out of it, and at the minute we're going the right way about it. But look, we have to play five other teams, and I think the five other teams probably have the same ideas as us, that they want to get out of Division 3.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, tactically, what are you trying to do with them, or like, what game plan are you coming down on? Because we kind of know that the trend this year is maybe moving away from ultra defensive teams. Teams are realising that they might need to leave three or four forwards up there, and maybe some sort of presence on the half forward line.
Yeah, look, I think probably just watching the first couple of league games, you know, I think there are a lot of teams trying that, you know. And look, and we're no different. Look, we're like, you don't want to be pencil holding that thing, you know. But look, we're no different. But at the same time, you know, you do have to remember, probably you do have to be defensively strong. And people talking about Dublin, and I watched Dublin against Tyrone all in the semi-final, and I keep cracking back that Dublin play 15 behind the ball, and no matter what the media thinks, no matter what they do, no matter what Joe Brawley thinks, watch the semi-final and you'll see the Dublin players sprinting with they're not even pressing the ball, they're sprinting backwards, they're just sprinting to get behind the ball. Dublin had 45, they had 15 players inside their own 45, and I was up watching them on Saturday night against Tyrone, and there was no difference that they don't. People say it's a myth about attacking football, and that Dublin play attacking football. To me, it's a myth. To me, they're just a hard working team, and if they have to get behind the ball, they have to get behind the ball. But what Dublin are good at is they do get out quickly. Look, and we're just trying to make Fermanagh as competitive as possible, and that's probably the game plan we're going with.
Yeah, no, true. And like at times in games, every team will have a lot of men behind the ball. I guess against Mayo in the final, they wouldn't have had that many men behind the ball as often, because Mayo might have played a bit more orthodox.
Yeah, it's probably, you're looking at different teams, and Dublin, to be fair, set up definitely for different teams. And I think probably if everyone played the same, you'd have Joe Brawley going mental saying, players are no teams playing different. Teams are going to play defensive. Teams are going to play attacking. And the soccer, if you look at the Premiership, every team has their own style. Like, and I think probably a lot of commentators probably get too hung up. They want everyone to play 15-on-15, which is great. Some teams can do it. Some teams can't. It's just about taking a sense of perspective. Like, and the thing, like, if everyone played the same, no one would watch the sport. Like,
I would agree. I think having everybody playing the same way would just be dull. But like, I mean, when you look at Fermanagh and you look at the starting point, and you've got Seamus Quigley back this year, you know, Sean Quigley, how good he is, and you've Tomás Corrigan, like, they're three proper strike forwards that, like, I mean, is almost Fermanagh's starting point. And like, you know, if you defend with the other players, you can still have three really, really strong forwards, because where a lot of teams fall down with this defensive system is they can't get the scores the other end. But it shouldn't be a problem for Fermanagh.
you would like to think that, Willie, but look, it's kind of hard, like, because you could do that then you could forget about the other players, like, you could forget about the other team's setup as well. Look, we've pretty good forwards with Sean Tomás, although Tomás is, he's hopefully coming back from injury, and with Shimmy, you know. But look, It would be remiss to say just that we're dependent on them three forwards as well. Because look, but a lot of teams do, and that we do tend to find down is probably if you build your team around that, just that attacking threat that day, you can become a lot predictable. Like, and you can become, if the three boys, one of the threes have a bad day, or one of the threes injured, you're kind of going to be stuck. You know, if your attacking things not look. I look at Slough Neil a lot, and Slough Neil play with a defensive system, but it's an attacking one as well, where they try to get as much scores spread around the field as possible. They don't have the one outstanding forward, but what they do is they do get the scores on the board. They do try to get maybe 7-8 separate scores, you know. And I think that's the dream for every team. And then we're lucky enough, if Sean and Shimmy do have a good day, or Tomás, they can step up. But look, we have a lot more inside forwards than them three boys, and I think they realise it. And we're just, look, it's early days. We've won two games. Look, we're going down to Sligo next week. We're in Sligo this Sunday, and anything could happen, you know. So I'm not too really getting carried away. We're trying to get the thing right. But see, with tactics and all at the minute, it's just probably more or less as a building for Armagh. Like, so we've run those. No one really sat down yet, like.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, talking about the two Quigleys, they're two huge men. You know, they're probably similar in a way. Like, I mean, they wouldn't be known for their movement, and Tomás Corrigan would be known for his movement. So, I suppose getting the balance between the two Quigleys, like, can you play the two of them together, and then, like, can you base your game plan around the type of ball that maybe, you know, might suit them? And that throws up its own challenges, having two big men in there as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, it does. But look, I think they're all problems you love having, you know, and you love looking at them problems, you know. So look, usually any of the hard decisions I give that to Rory, and that's about the head of it. But look, and I think that's what we're training. Like, that's what we're training for, to see if we can do that, you know. Like, and as of that, like, we always tell the boys, once it comes past this Sunday, that's it. you draw a line under it then, and then you take it to training next week, you know, like to see if you can improve, you know, and if you can either get on the squad or get on the team. And that's it. Look, I know it's easy to get caught up in the names or whatever, but look, I actually haven't thought of anything like that at all. We're just concentrating on getting a couple of points on here, the 2 points hopefully on Sunday or whatever. But whether who's going to play with who or what's going to, end of the day, the players, if they're going to play, going to have to work very, very hard for the team. And there's no point maybe scoring 12 points in one end and then maybe conceding 21 in the other. Like, you're not going to get too far.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Listen, one last one before I let you go, and it's something I've thought about, is going in with a team potentially as a selector or as an assistant manager. You have all these good ideas, and then you get your good ideas into the team and into the tactics, and then the manager gets all the credit for them.
No, come here. It wouldn't bother me as long as the team won. You know, tell you the truth. Again, you're throwing questions to me that I never really thought about. You know, I'll have them in the back of my head going to turn the night. But no, look, it's one of them things. I've just about more or less. The only thing I'm worried about is setting up prison tonight. You know, and I'm not worried about anything else, and probably trying to iron out any problems. But look, if we want to game off my ideas and Rory gets excited, I'd be more than happy with that. I think Rory's vice versa as well. So look, it's just one of them things. Look, I don't think too much in it, and all I'm kind of thinking about all this week is going down to Sligo and probably knowing how that's tough it's going to be, you know, because I think they had a good one against Wexford there, and we're going down to play. It's our first real away game in the league, so it's going to be tough to win in that there. So look, if that's the only thing I'm worried about, and probably at the night too as well, trying to improve a bit better for the boys and for the Sunday coming up.
Yeah, see, that's my selfish side coming out there again. I'd be thinking that here, I might hold off on this little move here until I manage Tyrone. Mickey Hart might be gone. I'll hold that tactic off for that. I'm not going to give this one to Gallagher.
No, I'm not that selfish. Maybe you might be that selfish, but no, look, I'm a guy that always just, I'm happy enough to stay to the headlines. Most of the times, any time I get in the headlines, it's usually for the wrong reason. So I'm happy enough to stay to the headlines.
Yeah, okay, maybe that's why you've 3 All-Irelands and I've got none. So listen, we'll leave it there, Ricey. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem, Willie.
Conan Doherty, who's a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them, yeah.
All right, let's have a look ahead to the weekend's matches here. We have Donegal and Dublin in Croke Park on Saturday night. That's on Air Sport 2. Donegal, obviously, young enough team. There's talk whether Michael Murphy, Neil McGee, Paddy McGrath, Frank McGlynn, all these lads are going to start coming back into the team now because, they've lost their first two, even though they were two good performances. They're probably going to lose a third one now, so they're going to be in relegation trouble. Donegal are. That's even after us tipping them to have a good league, Conan. Trust us. Talking about relegation, Kildare are at home to Tyrone, both teams on 0 points. Tyrone usually beat Kildare, so you'd fancy them to keep on beating Kildare, and that'll have Kildare and Donegal in some serious trouble. Monaghan play Kerry in Inniskeen. Both of those teams are away last week, so Monaghan are at home, and Kerry are on the road for 2 weeks in a row. Kerry are in a safe enough position. Game we want to focus on though is Galway and Mayo. Rochford hasn't beaten Galway yet, Conor, which is a strange statistic. Yeah. Played them twice in the championship, played them in the FBD this year. Did they play them in the FBD last year as well? Is it four or is it three losses?
I think it's four.
Which, like, I mean, what, they play each other in the Connacht quarter final, obviously. But, like, I mean, he doesn't want a fifth before that, because that becomes an issue then, I suppose. Or else, are you looking at this saying Mayo have bigger fish to fry and they can easily not they can easily lose another game and wait for Galway in the championship. It's hard to know the psychology of what way they're going to go into this. Like, I mean, you could make an argument to say they can't lose this, or you could make an argument to say it's not the end of the world once they beat them in the summer.
I think it becomes a mental thing if you lose to the same team five times yeah. their own in the space of 2 years.
Can a team that's on Mayo's level have a mental thing about Galway who are at a level below them? It's a really weird one, isn't it?
Really shouldn't, yeah. And like, Galway are going to be really up for this. They played them in the FPD. Like, Mayo played a really experimental team. Galway's was a bit better there in January, but Galway went down to 12 men. It was proper bite at, like, Damien Gomer got sent off. They were really up for it, and Kevin Welsh was asked about it afterwards. He's like, we're never going to stand down against Mayo, like, you know, really setting the stall out, even right. Early as January. And like, Mayo go into this one on 2 points, having eked out a win over Monaghan, didn't play well against Kerry, Dublin at home after this. So if they lose, you're looking at potentially yeah. 2 points after four games and in real relegation trouble. So you know, I try not to get worried about Mayo this time of year every year, because I know there's bigger fish to fry.
But
there's
you
a
end
lot
up
different
getting
factors,
worried.
But I end up getting worried. The same last year, I thought we were going, like, halfway through the game against Donegal and Castlebar, I thought we were going down. But no, I think I, as I said, I don't think Mayo have a whole lot of form to go on. Just the last night, I just thought Mayo only scored 1-2 from play, and I thought we really kind of lacked it. Jason Doherty tried his best, but really lacked a ball winning presence up front, the way that Mayo, you know, Mayo like to let long ball in, and Evan Regan and Neil Douglas struggled. So with Evan Regan out the next day as well, and given the precarious situation that Mayo are in, I'd imagine he's going to be looking to throw probably Killian and Andy in, because as I said, like, I think it's a thing that when you're losing to Galway this many times in a row, they'll want to be making a statement. May is the big one, but like, nice to have that edge kind of going into May that finally kind of put it into that run. So I'll be reluctantly giving my tip to Mayo for Sunday.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a difficult one. And Mayo are in the unfortunate position in that they just don't have a squad. They don't have players that can come in and give these lads a rest and be able to trust them to survive in Division 1. That's the reality of it. They need their first team. And it was last year when they pretty much had their first team back, they were able to make the recovery. And I think they could have made a recovery the year before as well. That this trying out these three or four lads, just not, Mayo can't do it in Division 1.
Was it 15 lads? Or, like, you know, was it 30 last year you said that they tried out?
The 30, yeah.
Like, you know, they still had the same 17, 18 that were the ones that they used. And it's the same again this year. But I'm sort of inclined to agree with Connor, though. I just think it's still Mayo. They do need to win because they have Dublin next week. And I think that they will want to put down a marker themselves against Galway. Yeah. Like, you know, they're not going to want to keep getting beat by Galway. Like, that's no matter what Mayo team goes out, they're not going to accept that. So I've got them in my accumulator anyway, and I think they will. They'll
do
the business.
They have to win, and the reason that they probably have to win is that this isn't even Galway's best team. Like, this is a weakened Galway team. Like, I mean, it was a harmless team to beat. I don't know whether we criticised Galway a lot here last Monday. And I actually had to take a lot of it out of the podcast because the podcast was just so long. I said, look, we'll talk about Galway again. So couldn't really get it too much into it. But, like, I mean, they're missing Michael Daly. They're missing Liam Silk. They're missing Micheál Lundy, Michael Farragher, Ian Burke, Sean Armstrong, Danny Cummins. None of them started the last day. Like, I mean, this is a lot of defenders and a lot of forwards that they're actually missing. And important players as well. So you've got players like, how is Kine staying on that team as a marker? Like, I mean, yeah. McBrearty gave him a roast. How many roastings does Kine have to get before Walsh says, I'm not sure this lad is probably up to that level? Now, he had a good debut year when they won the Connacht title.
Yeah.
But he hasn't had a good year since that. Like, I mean, he just hasn't.
Well, he even struggled against Tipperary, wasn't that the year that he struggled
that
against
Tipperary? That was the year. He had a good Connacht championship then, right? Which was two games. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. Then you have in the forwards, young Sean Kelly, who just wasn't at the races from the under-21s last Sunday. Patrick Sweeney in the forwards just wasn't at the races. There's no forward. Was in, and Adrian Varley, not at the races. And the only two forwards that performed last week were the two, Shane Walsh and Comer. And, like, I mean, I talked quickly on the podcast Monday about them having actually no plan in the forwards. Now, in his defence, he's missing a lot of his support forwards. Like, Daly's an outstanding player. Farragher, Burke was great in the championship. Sean Armstrong coming back in. There's a lot of lads that it's hard to be too critical of him when he's not playing with his full hand. But just expecting more from Galway. Like, people might think that's harsh considering they've two from two. But looking how competitive that division is, they lose to Mayo, they lose to Dublin, they lose to Kerry. You know, they could end up losing the other four, and suddenly, like, I don't see enough from Galway to think that they're building.
Suppose you are just you're looking at it in that sense. Like the week before, we hammered Kerry and they beat Donegal as well. So both weeks we were praising Donegal, even though they lost twice. And that's probably a trend in all media outlets at the minute, where we're all just praised. Like, you know, Tyrone never got as much praise in their life for losing 5 points to Dublin. You know, like after winning an Ulster Championship and getting the semi-final, but everyone was raving that they were attacking.
You can see them doing some. Like, I always like to see, I don't like analysing games too much in the league, but I like to see, are they building on something? Are they trying something different? Yeah. Is he, are they adding him? You look at Galway and you're like, what are they doing
and
here?
And that's the nature of the league, I suppose. Now we can see Donegal relatively are probably on course to have a better championship than last year, whereas last year Galway won, like, you know, they didn't win Connacht actually, but last year, like 2 years ago, they won Connacht. They got to the quarter final last year. Now it's like, what are they showing us now that they're going to push on to another level? And maybe, yeah, I don't think they definitely aren't showing that yet at the minute.
Yeah, and it's weird. They've got 2 wins in Division 1 yet. I'd say in the last 2 years at this time, we were more kind of, people were more optimistic about what goal we were going to do than they are now.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
You know, yeah.
Prediction, they won the All-Ireland.
yeah. But that's it. Their plan at the moment seems to be to get the ball to Damien Comer, which isn't the worst plan in the world considering the form he's in.
They don't get him on it enough, though. Like, yeah. I mean, he lives off scraps. The scores he got against Galway or against Donegal were ones that he came out
real individual
kind of
ones,
did him himself. It's almost like, I'm sick of it in here, I'm just going to go out and do something as captain. I have to take this on myself, and this lad's able to do it. But you saw no quality ball going into him, as in, we've got this weapon, the McBrearty on the other side, and you wonder, where's Galway's game plan around him? Or where's Galway, did you ever once see Shane Walsh taking a ball at pace off Comer?
Where's the
kind of game plan here? Like, I mean, these are two top notch players in the country. No interlink play. How many balls does Shane Walsh give Comer? You know, it's like they're all paying for themselves almost. And like, again, you talk about, we made a laugh of Stephen Poacher here in the first show back about all his different transition games, and we're like, it's gobbledygook. And remember I said that there was one that I kind of understood, and it was like a transition kick or run or whatever. So you turn the ball over in your backs, are you going to run it or are you going to kick it? Like, Galway seem to run a lot. They don't seem to kick very often. If they do kick, it's just because somebody's wide open free. Then he might throw it backwards. So like, you're just looking at it thinking, what's happening here? What are they being coached to do going forward?
Yeah, and Damien Comer is good enough now to be one of the best players in the country. Like, he's got everything. Like, and all you have to do now is design a system around him. Imagine, like, I don't want to harp back to Jim McGuinness, but imagine he was in charge of the goal. It would all be designed around getting him on the ball.
3-year plan. Walsh goes this year, McGuinness failed soccer career, and this is all going to fall into place for my 3 year.
But just use him. Like, he's your biggest strength, so get the most out of that strength.
That's it. And exactly. But now, again, you don't want to be too critical on Walsh, because when he gets everybody back, he'll have Daly and Shane Walsh on the half forward line. Yeah. He'll have Comer along with one of Burke, Armstrong or Cummins maybe on the full forward line. And there's your four. Johnny Heaney and Flynn maybe working as wing forwards.
I like Brannigan.
Brannigan's been decent.
Yeah, he's all right. But I wonder where he fits in, because he's a strange player, as in he's not that inside forward, and he's not as good as Daly or Walsh to be those two to hold the half forward line. And he's not much of a work. I don't really know where to put him in. I do like him as a player. But maybe there is a place for him if you just play one working wing forward. But again, we don't see, I just don't see this kind of, I don't know, plan.
Reminds me a bit, I don't like making those comparisons, but reminds me a bit of Mourinho at United, where everything is very structured and it's tight
up
and solid.
Up until the attack.
And then the attack can do what they want.
And you hope for a bit of flair up front.
Like, I've put good players up there, sort it out yourselves. Like.
That's a good comparison.
That's brought them unstuck in Croke Park, actually, because they've got a lot of momentum from beating Mayo. And I think because they beat Mayo when they were under strength, it's given a false impression of how good they are. And then they've got to Croke Park and they've really come unstuck. They were really disappointing against Kerry, and they were really disappointing against Tipperary the year before, and it's because of that, because they don't have a sophisticated game plan to probably beat the best teams in Croke Park.
Yeah, or even link up play. Like, I mean, you see Gooch in a centre forward position, and you see James O'Donoghue, you'll see an understanding between. Where's the understanding between Walsh and Comer? Where's that kind of? I'm sure they're friends, but they don't look it on the field, because it doesn't look like, you know what I mean. Where's the nice diagonal balls Walsh will give him, and then he's back running.
They're both inclined to take on their man as soon as they get the ball.
Take on their man. That's true as well. Yeah. That's true as well. But another thing is, if you've got another lad in the half forward line, given Comer a good diagonal ball, Walsh can make that strike run off him, and we don't see that either. So, like, I mean, you'd love to see some system in their play. But look, it's on television, so we'll be able to cover that on Monday, and we'll be able to make a decision of whether Galway are going somewhere or not, because we'll have two games two games to work off. Then let's come. We need to move to Division 2. The big one in Division 2, it's on Air Sport 1 on Saturday night. Is that clashing with Dublin Donegal? Of course it is. Yeah, okay. So you might have to record that, because I do want to watch this game, because we haven't done enough on Division 2. Cavan play Meath in Breffni Park. That's on Air Sport 1. Goal shy Cavan scored 5 goals in the last 2 games, so maybe we might be seeing something new from Cavan. I'm not holding my breath, and that's without Shawnee Johnson and Grode McKiernan. Like, they're kind of depleted as well. Other games, Clare and Tipperary wouldn't set the pulse racing. Cork Loud again wouldn't set the pulse racing. Roscommon, who have been very kind of resourceful in their last 2 games with their comebacks, would love to have an easier game, I'm sure, against Down, and that's in Dr. Hyde Park. Cork are obviously home to Loud, and Clare are home to Tipperary, so you'd fancy Cork, Roscommon and Tipperary in those 3. Division 3, big one of the division, you'd have to say, is Armagh Longford. They've set the early pace in the division. I'm pretty sure they both have 2 wins out of 2, and they do. They're both top of the table, and they've got Armagh have plus 23 points difference, Longford have plus 18. So they're absolutely flying it, and that's a huge game up there. The one we might take a quick look at is relegation battle, Conan, unfortunately for you, which is Derry and Offaly. And these are 2 teams rooted to the bottom of the table. Offaly are the bottom, on the bottom, minus 19 points difference, 2 terrible opening games, and Derry are minus 10. You know, poor start. Like, I mean, this is Derry we're talking about, bottom of Division 3. Like, I looked last year at Laois in a similar position, and I went, "Ad'll win a couple of games." look where Laois are. You know what I mean? Like,
we're the exact same. You predicted Laois to get out of Division 3 last year, and I did the same with Derry. They are going out of it, but in the wrong direction. It's sort of like the Cork syndrome. Like you say, it's Derry and it's Cork, and it's not the same team anymore. It's not. And even the players that aren't there, I know there are a few like around the county that might be good enough to come in, and obviously the Sochneil boys, but it's not like there's a great team there waiting to put together. Like, it's gone. Like, and that those great teams of the Noddies, who beat Armagh and Tyrone quite regularly and everyone Ulster, but you know, they were competing with these boys all the time. They're all gone, like, you know, and it's just a young team with an experienced manager at this level, and it's very much a work in progress.
Yeah, and Joe Brawley was, I was reading his piece last week, and he was talking about them maybe leaving a couple of extra forwards up than they had been. So maybe the new manager has got a little bit more of an attacking game plan. But then again, you tried to bring out an attacking game plan in Ulster, and you could get caught, because, like, I mean, if another team's playing a defensive game plan, it's not, you can easily leave yourself open on the counter-attack. So it's a difficult one in Ulster trying to move away from that style, when other teams might not necessarily be moving away from it. But they're playing Offaly, lads, and that's interesting. Offaly are a team that we thought maybe was going a little bit, maybe building under Pat Flanagan, and maybe, you know, getting somewhere. They got out of Division 4, and they had some decent championship, did some bad championship results and some decent ones. But they've kind of, there's talk now again that they're back in transition again, because Niall McNamee and Brian Darby have retired. Then you have Rory Allen, who opted out. You have Graham Guilfoyle, who opted out because of work commitments. They were all 4 of them were on the championship team last year. And then you have Rory McNamee, who was under 21 captain, and he's opted out as well. So he came on as a sub against Westmeath last year in the championship. So instead of building on something, moving up to Division 3, they barely scraped survival by beating Laois last year in Division 3. Now it looks like they're heading straight back down to Division 4. They have new manager Stephen Wallace, who was over the Kerry junior team, Billy Sheehan, who is Cork trainer last year, ex-teammate of mine, he is the trainer. So, like, it looks like they have a young, you know, good management team, but they just don't have the players to work with. Like, I mean, Wallace is on record saying we have to set targets. Division 2 is realistic. Where we go in Leinster remains to be seen. He wants to make Offaly football sexy again, and that's the kind of terminology that I'm trying to put out there. So we might try and get him on the show, because he sounds like, you know, he might be a decent interview. Like, I mean, he's not playing with a strong hand. Offaly made the under 21 Leinster final last year, which was a, you know, good achievement. Got beaten well by Dublin. They have this lad Keane Johnson, who's in the Leaving Cert, and he's their new Niall McNamee now. He's their great white hope, but he's bloody in his Leaving Cert.
Yeah.
And he's playing all the games so far this year. So, like, I mean, they're trying to depend on a young lad like that to get him out of that, this time of the year and these horrible games and avoiding relegation. It's not exactly the kind of introduction to senior football I'm sure that Keane was hoping for.
Some of the clips of him, though, like, he looks really
live
sharp,
wire,
like,
yeah.
Even for club and minors, like for Offaly last year, like he Yeah, he's racking up some ridiculous scores. It's just a shame that McNamee didn't maybe hang around for a year or two.
Do you know what? I was thinking the same thing. And like, I mean,
there
I'd be
a mentor
of
some,
but like, just let, as a mentor, just let this lad in. Because Niall McNamee's still flying it. Like, Niall McNamee didn't retire because of injury or anything. He just retired. And we had him on the show here last year. Look, and Niall McNamee owes Offaly football nothing. He's entitled to retire. Just think, if I was Niall McNamee and this young fellow was coming up through the ranks, I might give him 1 year and play inside together.
Even take the heat off him for a year as well while you're still being marked. And it's a real selfless thing for him to do. But
even I remember in 2008 with Laois, when Donny Kingston came on the scene, that energised us. Like, we were like, Jesus, now this lad's really adding to us. You know, it kind of give you that little, if he's that good, because Donny was that good. I don't know what Niall's like. I'm not going to tell Niall what to do, but like, I mean, you would make you think twice if you this new fella coming up when you wanted maybe an inside partner, and there he is and you're retired and they're nearly starting all over again.
And so, and for Keane Johnson now, it's just much more pressure, whereas before he could have been just this amazing add-on that wasn't there, just a complete extra to the team, but now he's the replacement for their best player of a generation. So
a lot of pressure onto him as well. So yeah, I think Offaly are going down in that division, and it'd be Wexford maybe or Derry. Wexford run 0 points as well. I think that's going to be a toss up. Whenever they play each other, we'll see what happens. The other games in Division 3 are Sligo, Fermanagh. Fancy Fermanagh there, the way they're going. And Wexford, Westmeath, that's in Wexford Park. Sligo are at home to Fermanagh, and you fancy Westmeath to beat Wexford, who are in disarray as well. Laois and Waterford, Moore Park, 7 o'clock Saturday night. Laois getting loads of Saturday night games. Ross Munnelly is back in the Laois team, lads. Give a shout out to Ross Munnelly. He's on the go a long, long time.
35. I saw that today, I couldn't believe he's that old.
And
he's been the kind of impact sub the last few years, but you talk to Ross, and Ross isn't seeing himself in that role. He says, I'll get onto it now if I'm playing well. Funny one about Ross was that the girlfriend opened up the restaurant there before Christmas, and Ross sends me a text, here, can I book a table for two? So I got him table up near the kitchen, whatever, and knew he was bringing in a date or whatever. And the one night Ross lands in with a sneaky date, all the Port Laois footballers in there. Kieran Lillis, Colin Boyle, Paul Cahillan, and they're at a table. Munnelly has to parade past. So he stops to talk to all the lads, and I'm behind the counter laughing at all this stuff going on. And
he's not coming back to you again.
So it's just a disaster. I think it was like one of their first dates as well. It's not like it's your girlfriend. You go, this is like, you know what I mean? Head down, get the date done with and get to know each other, but not introduce her to the whole of the Port Laois team. So I thought I'd tell that little one about Ross. Then what's the other one? It's the Leitrim one we were going to look at. Leitrim are away to Carlow, and Leitrim are kind of, I don't know, like, I mean, we remember we talked last year, Conan, about Leitrim, and they were going places. They had Brendan McGuckin as their manager. They had John O'Mahony in as a selector. They had Miles from Mayo in as a physical trainer. They had a great management team, and they started the league really well. Like, I mean, they won 4 games in the league last year, and then they lost to Roscommon in the championship, and it's almost like the wind went out of their sails. So they have the same management team in here again this year. Now, in their defence, they've played the 2 best teams in the division so far. Like, I mean, they've lost to arguably the 2 favourites, Antrim and Laois. So maybe it's not all doom and gloom, but like, I mean, it doesn't look like they're going all too well. They've had a big turnover of players already from last year's championship team, and this is an ongoing problem for Leitrim year on year on year, is getting fellas the same squad to commit again for the following year.
And like, yeah, they're going to play the next best team or one of the top 2 teams on Saturday, is it, against Carlow?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it doesn't get easier for them. They had, I think it was 7 league debuts they put out in the first week. So yeah, that tells you the turnover that they have at the minute. Like,
and that's terrible. I heard another stat about Leitrim. Leitrim played Laois in a qualifier in 2012. Justin McNulty was the Laois manager, and Laois scraped out of Carrick and Shannon against Leitrim. There's no player of the 17 that played that day, the 15 and the 2 subs from Leitrim that are involved now.
From 2012.
Jeez. So like, it's only 6 years ago. None. Not one. So then you've got 7. You've, I think, 6 or 7 of last, or 6 of last year's championship team are not involved again this year, and it's just a disaster. Because when you look at it, I was looking at that piece that Malachy Clerkin did in the Irish Times along with Eamon O'Donoghue, and it was about how the county squad is made up and where they work and everything. And like, I mean, Leitrim just makes for depressing reading for Leitrim. They've 20 in Dublin, and they've only six
in Leitrim. Is it?
Oh no, that's based in Dublin. They've 20 footballers based in Dublin. No, sorry, and then they've 6 based in other counties. So that's 26. How many's on your squad? Like, how many local lads do you have? So, like, I mean, you're working in Dublin. Yeah. You're playing for Leitrim. Like, you probably can't commit every year. Yeah. You'll probably give it a good burst when John O'Mahony gets involved for 1 year. Play. Realise you're way off Roscommon, and Roscommon weren't even at full strength, and go, ah, I'm not going back. I'm not committing to that again the following year. Like, I mean, that's the reality they're facing.
And they don't get a Tuesday night training session, do they? Like, they probably do it in Dublin. And
but that turnover of players as well, like you said, like 2012, there was what, 15 of them, none of them playing?
17, like, the two subs even.
I mean, like, what, like, to be a decent intercounty player, you have to be like, you have to go through years of development of training, of strength and conditioning and everything.
That's
so you have to regenerate every year. Like, what hope do you have against teams that are just going to be bigger and have more resources than you?
They're starting from scratch basically every year, kind of, you know, with that big with that great turnover. And, like, I mean, they don't have, like, when you're talking about the turnover, you're talking about turnover with Leitrim, and we're talking Mayo don't have much outside their first 15. So, like, I mean, what are Leitrim supposed to do when they lose that 5 or 6 and they're turning it over? What are they turning it over with?
Yeah.
Do you know? So it must be just,
to Dublin.
It must be just demoralising year after year. Like, I mean, when you look at it, they beat Carlow last year. Look at the change in the year now. Like, they're not given a hope going to Carlow this year, because Carlow have moved on and Leitrim have gone backwards. They beat Carlow, they beat Wicklow, they beat London, and they beat Waterford. They had a good league with their first 15, and now they're facing into maybe a league that's, you know, just maybe a little bit too far for them. That's just the reality of it. The other games in that, so obviously you'd fancy Laois against Waterford, you'd fancy Carlow against Leitrim, London are at home to Limerick. I think that's a toss up. London, very hard place to go. When are we going to start choosing that, lads? And Antrim play Wicklow at home, so you'd fancy Antrim strongly there. Before we go, lads, let's do this accumulator. So Conor, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I nearly threw London into it, actually, because I think it's a toss up as well.
We don't trust them yet.
But no, not yet. So I've gone with my beloved Mayo with Tyrone, because I think they really need a win, and I think they'll eke it out against Kildare. I've gone with Meath, really impressive start to Division 2, and I've gone with Conan's Derry, because as bad as they are, I think they'll beat Offaly. So that works out at about just under 8-1.
8-1, not too bad.
Yeah, I stayed away from Derry anyway, but I...
And stay away from draws.
I did stay away from draws. A bit mayor than that. See, Stevie's 26,000-1 shot didn't come up.
What a moron. How much did he put on that?
A fiver, was it?
Anyway,
that was the one that we had to stop the podcast last week, because Stevie started getting all excited, showing his odds in the middle of it, and who's trying to concentrate?
Car trouble, he says. He might have wanted to show his face after that.
He's making it back. I remember Dublin against Donegal with 6 teams, but 4 of them should come up. Cardo against Leitrim, Antrim against Wicklow, London against Limerick, they're all home. Now, London, not really basing on anything other than it's a tough place to go. And Tyrone against Kildare and Mayo against Galway.
Tyrone against Kildare and Mayo against Galway.
So a lot of bankers there, but 10-1.
A lot of bankers there, yeah. You're throwing in London and Limerick into that. I'm going for Mayo, Meath, Roscommon and Derry. So there's actually similarities to yours, Conor, except for I'm going for Roscommon at home to Down. So I don't know what that works out at, but they're all going to win, and you can work it out in the bookies when you're all listening.
I'll collect both of our bets.
Right, listen, we may leave it there, lads. That's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday, and it looks like it'll be Galway, Mayo and Cavan Mead we'll be concentrating on, with Keane Ward, and Conan will be here too. So talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.